everyone, and welcome to Purple Row Radio. My name is Greg Stanwood, staff writer at Purple Row. I'm here along with Andrew Martin, who is the managing editor of Purple Row. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Greg. How are you?
Don't ask. I'm quite sick at the moment, and while listening back to the test recording we just did, I sound okay. I am... it's a little difficult to speak here, so we're not going to talk too long here at the start of the show. We've got an interview with Ted Berg of TedQuarters.net that we'll bring you guys in the middle, but I know that we want to sound off a little bit at least on the offensive struggles of the team so far. It's been a rough week for the team, that
yeah,
is.
It's been generally unfun. I mean, 1-5 on a road trip, I mean... We should have won at least gone 500 on this trip, but of course we get walked off on, you know, three out of the six games walked off on. We know that Houston Street deserves a hiccup, so to speak. I mean, he saved 11 of 11. It was not borderline, but he was pretty much nails before that. And then, just had an implosion, two shots to left field and well, that's all she wrote for that game as far as Houston Street was concerned. And the next night, Betancourt, I mean, the single he gave it to Buster Posey was a bloop to no man's land. The double was legit, and that sucks. But then the Nate Shearholtz double down the line, I mean, that was a good pitch on the black, and he just reached out and stuck his bat out and knocked it into the corner. Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be like, you know, you got to tip your hat sometimes, but Betancourt made his pitch. And I really think Shearholtz just got lucky on that one. You know, I mean, that had just as much chance of landing foul. You know what I mean? But it just kind of seems like this road trip was destined to be doomed for the Rockies. And frankly, this is going to be what their big rebound is. You know, we're going to have to see how they rebound. Hopefully it's a big rebound and they destroy all the opposition and other, you know, fighting words like that. So, yeah, the biggest struggle really hasn't even been the pitching or the bullpen specifically. I mean, the bullpen usage has been very questionable, considering that Felipe Paulino was involved in all three of those walk-offs. But in general, the pitching has been good enough. I mean, the pitching that we've been seeing has been enough to win games. The bats are really to blame right now. Like nobody's hitting, just nobody's hitting. We're getting a few clutch hits from Helton and, you know, we saw some good small ball play with sack flies and stuff. I think in the first game of the San Fran series, but, past that, there's nobody's hitting. And, you know, the question is, you know, is this team just really not that good at hitting and stuff? If you look at the numbers for the National League, nobody except for Cincinnati and St. Louis is really hitting. Everyone is hitting below average. I think actually the Mets, if you count for park effects and stuff, which are kind of questionable given the relative newness of Citi Field, but the Mets are just barely above average. Everyone else is below average. This isn't to say the Rockies are batting okay, and it's actually okay, and no, don't worry, they're fine. Now, they're batting even worse than the other teams that are below average. I mean, it's really depressing to watch out there. And the knee-jerk reaction is, well, what's wrong with them? They can't all – what's a common thread between all of these guys who are batting terribly? Well, it must be the hitting coach, Carney Lansford. We better fire him. It's this first week of May. It's really early in the season still. Yeah, it's not April anymore, but if this team is still batting as pathetically as it is in June, yeah, we need to start thinking about what other options we have, maybe forcing some guys from the minors and doing a lot of roster juggling. But for right now, I mean, this is their first real shot of adversity, and it sucks to watch, but this team is just too good to let this, you know, sit the way it is. Cargo's starting to finally get out of a slump. Tulo's in the midst of a decent size slump, despite his home run the other day. Helton's hitting well. That's a good thing. But I mean, I just don't see how this team could be as bad as they are right now. And it's driving me nuts. It's just driving me nuts. It's driving everyone nuts, obviously. I have faith in a rebound. And we have the Padres and the Mets coming into town this next week, so I really think that could be a good opportunity to, sink our teeth into something and get something going at home and hopefully just carry that momentum into the next road trip. But, for right now, it's an uncomfortable place to be. Good news is we're still on top of the division, and granted it's only by one game rather than three games like we would have hoped with a single win in the Giants series, but, you know, here we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny to see now that there's sort of the opposite polar spectrum in terms of the way the team's been playing. You know, we started off so hot, and, you know, we were trying to remind everybody that there was a lot of season left and that, you know, we're not going to stay on pace for 135 wins. Everybody should calm down a little bit. And now we're getting the inverse reaction and we're playing below our means. And now we're getting the opposite reaction where everybody's inclined to decide that this is Armageddon and we have to remind everybody again. It's, you know, we're not that far into the season. Calm down. Except but, this time for well, the exact opposite reason.
What drives me nuts is when a team's doing really well, people are all like, oh, look how good they are. I don't believe it's a mistake because no team, you know, no one's as good. Tulowitzki, blah, 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 blah. But then when they hit the bad spell, no one's like, this team, there's no way this team is this bad. There's no way. They're just in a bad spell right now. They're gonna peak up. Everyone goes, oh, well, the team's doing bad. They must all actually be miserably low talent levels of baseball players, and they're not as good as we all thought they were. I don't see how that, like, adds up. If we're going to try to issue the extraordinarily good play, why are we not trying to issue the extraordinarily bad play? We know this team is somewhere in the middle, and there's just no way they're not. We've seen them do better than this. And, yeah, I guess everyone has the tendency to, you know, look for the worst-case scenario, stand on the negative, stuff like that. So, whatever. I'm hoping that we can have a little faith in our team at some point soon here. Oh, yeah.
All right.
yeah, exactly. Very, very professional as I just kind of ramble on and then, oh, yeah.
So is there anything else that we want to get out of the way here before we go to the interview or?
At the moment, there's not much to discuss. We haven't seen any really drastic moves. We did see Rodgers go to the DL before the San Francisco series.
Martin's
back. And Clay Morton did his start and did a good job on there. I wouldn't be surprised to see Morton get another couple starts before he gets sent back down. Maybe even just be the stopgap until Aaron Cook's back. Yeah, that's I say too much. I did it again. He has been effective. Not really inspiring as far as pitchers go, but he's a back-end starter and is a kind of a depth acquisition. So, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and enjoy him for, you know, what he's done so far. But going forward, I do have to wonder if there's going to be some moves happening, you know, this week or the next week here because, you know, Ty Wiggins is going to be healthy again eventually here, but Stewart still looks bad at the plate. Lopez still looks miserable. I mean, it'd be an overly drastic move just to kind of, you know, send them both down. I mean, Lopez out of options, I'm pretty sure, but
he has the service time issue anyway. So even if
that's right, he's been up since he was like what 16 or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. He just crossed a couple days ago into free agency. So I mean, into 6 years of service time, so he'll be eligible basically.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But yeah, the other move that they could make is Paulino. You know, we're paying him $850K. If we lose him on waivers, I don't think anybody's going to be too upset. I mean, paying half his contract, because the, claiming team would be responsible for the minimum, wouldn't be too huge of an issue.
Eating, you know, $400,000 or whatever the remaining prorated amount would be isn't going to be that bad of a hit. I still maintain Paulino hasn't been as bad as the numbers are looking.
No, he has, but we also know that the team itself is saying, is taking the attitude that they're not pleased that he's basically not been doing his job recently. And I mean, he can kind of become an easy scapegoat, if you will. But I wouldn't be surprised if they designate him or try to outright him or something like that, especially when they could just easily replace him with someone like Matt Daly, who's going insane in Colorado Springs right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Daly, but I feel like his criticisms are kind of almost disingenuous. People say, well, the pitcher's job is to get outs. Okay, yeah, the pitcher's job is to get outs. You're right, that is the definition of what a pitcher's job is to get outs via throwing baseballs toward a batter. But not everyone is equally good at their job. So why are we putting the guys who are least good at their job into the situations that demand the people who are best at their job?
Mm-hmm.
I've said this, I mean, and I'm sorry for people who've been following the game threads of the game wraps, because I've been I've said this so many times, not so much to try to, you know, beat it into everyone's heads, but more just to express frustration. And I just can't stop repeating myself. Why, this is a problem all throughout baseball, that managers seem to think, well, we need to save our closer for when we get the lead on the road. What if you don't get the lead? What if the other team gets the lead? That means you lose. I mean, everyone's been ranting about Ron Washington doing this with Neftali Feliz for like 2 years now. I mean, for starters, that guy needs to be in the rotation. But secondly, if he's your best reliever, you need to use him in the tightest spots. That doesn't necessarily mean when your team has a lead of three or less in a game-deciding inning. No, it means you use him when you're about to lose the game. Or if a bad inning from a pitcher loses you the game, that's when you use your best pitchers. That's how you have relievers. But since the advent of the closer reliever, not necessarily since the advent of it, because, I mean, relief staffs in the majors have taken different forms over the past 40 years or so, but the modern-day view of the closer is guy who takes ninth inning with a three or less run lead, and it's just foolish. I don't deny that the concept of a concept of a closer is somewhat necessary, because no, not everyone pitches well with a game on the line. I mean, even if it's just a short lead. But on the other hand, I don't know. This is why I'm glad the Rockies have Lidstrom and Street, because you have two guys with ninth inning experience. That's kind of what it comes down to for me, is that if one of them isn't doing well, you have someone else who at least knows how to handle a ninth inning.
Sure. And I mean, the one time we really had a decent explanation of why Paulino was in the game was that time Lindstrom was having issues with the temperature. But of course, the argument would be, why wasn't it, say, Matt Belisle or somebody else instead of Paulino that went in that situation?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, especially after two walk-offs in a row involving Paulino, why would you go to Paulino? And then, even furthermore, why would you go to Morales? I've been defending Morales this season because he's not been bad. He's been actually pretty good. Because, it drives me nuts. It's like I know Jim Tracy is not actively trying to lose games. That would be a very foolish thing to say. But his decisions are not the smart ones when the game is tied in the San Francisco walk-off portion of the innings.
Mm-hmm.
You have to put your best relievers in. Even if you want to save Street, put in anyone else. And granted, a lot of guys were used before the ninth inning there. I don't know. I'm beating a dead horse here. And I'm going to probably keep beating as the season goes on. It's just foolish bullpen use, and it just upsets. It's one of the few things that really upsets me. Like, if the people say, oh, Tracy, why did you pinch runner instead of... Yeah, whatever. I'm sure. Why didn't the runners do the thing? Or why didn't things look better earlier in the game? Why didn't the bat score more runs? We weren't put in the situation. I'll excuse most managerial decisions, but three games in a row, the same decision every time, and three walk-off losses? Dude, come on. Really?
As we move a little deeper into the season and we start running low on things to talk about without rambling like usual, it might be interesting to sit down and discuss some of these more theoretical ideas of causality within the game and so forth. I'd be interested in bringing that up if people are interested in listening to it. But right now we've been talking for 15 minutes and we only plan to talk for about five or so. So I think it's time we moved on to the interview. So we'll bring you that right now and then wrap up really quickly at the end of the show. So we'll see you then. Alright, everyone, we're on the line with Ted Berg, who runs TedQuarters.net. Thanks for joining us today.
Greg, thanks for having me.
So you're actually our first guest on this show who's not from an SB Nation blog, and I thought maybe it would be a good idea for you to give a quick rundown of your website there and what sorts of things people can expect to see written on there.
Well, I write for an SNY.TV blog, which is, I guess, sort of like similar to an SB Nation type of thing. It's another blog network. We're exclusively out of New York, for Sportsnet New York, which is the Mets TV network. And my blog is different. The rest of the blogs are affiliated specifically with a team. I focus mostly on the Mets, but I do a little bit of all sports, and I also write a little bit about everything, random Wikipedia posts, and a lot about Taco Bell and sandwiches as well.
Why Taco Bell?
Because it's delicious.
All right.
It's funny because the Rockies have a promotion, as you know, Ted, that and most Rockies fans and everyone listening probably knows this as well, but if the Rockies score 7 runs in a game, the next day you can get like 4 tacos for like $2 or something like that at your nearest participating Taco Bell. Our former editor, Russ Oates, also lives up in New York, and he has nothing but horrible, horrible things to say about Taco Bell. So when he came down to Denver for opening day a little while back, I made sure to take him to a local taco joint off of Federal called Tacos y Salsas, and a few Denver natives should know about that place, and if you don't, look it up because it's amazing. But it's more of a, you know, fresh corn tortillas and a variety of meats and stuff like that, and actually don't have real tacos. So I'm hoping his opinion on tacos will soften a little bit because that's just sad.
Well, I think there was a Rockies game, and I think it was Giambi. There was a home run, I believe it was a regular season, it must have been an interleague game, where Giambi hit a home run off Jonathan Papelbon that was a walk-off home run that not only won the game for the Rockies, but won tacos for the people. It was sort of a, and the Rockies have that graphic that happens whenever they score that game that shows the dancing
the
tacos.
The dancing tacos, yes.
Yeah.
The dancing horror tacos.
Yeah, sort of an incredible confluence of awesomeness. Just all sorts of, with the mustache on Giambi and everything going right at the same time, and Jonathan Papelbon, suffering defeat. Really, the best series of events that could possibly happen.
I think Saber Metrics needs to make an adjustment for things like that. Hits off Papelbon, she counts as double. Things that get fan promotions should also be worth double.
Like tacos over replacement taco or something.
I think it was 2009, I wrote an article about that. Just in 7 run Rockies, with the games where the Rockies scored 7 runs, like who had the highest like weighted on base average or something like that. And I think it was Todd Helton, who was the tacoiest player on the lineup.
That's amazing research. That's good work.
Well, the funniest thing is, like, a week later, I can't remember who the guy wrote for it. I have to look back into it. But he wrote an article exactly the same as me. But he was, mine was more like weighted on base average and saber stuff. And he said, like, taco RBIs and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, what are the odds? So I emailed him and said, did you totally just steal my idea? And he goes, you got an idea? The taco thing? I had no. Oh, you wrote that too? I had no idea. And we had a nice little exchange there. But I'm like, wow. Small world.
Maybe
apparently
a great minds type thing, you know. I mean, it's good thinking.
I'd be more mad about it if it was such a great idea.
Right.
Anyhow, so I think we have you here to talk about baseball. We can keep talking about fast food though, if you'd like, Greg. What do you think?
Let's move on to some Mets talk, shall we?
We can do that.
So the big news right now with the Mets, or at least that's getting attention outside of the Mets fan base, if you will, is all about Jose Reyes and what's going to be going on with him over the rest of the season. Will he be traded to a place like San Francisco or so forth? I notice on your website that you've got a lot to say about Jose Reyes on your front page. So why don't you break down what's going on with the way the organization feels about him and where you think he's going to wind up, or if he'll stay around?
Well, I mean, it's a great question, and obviously it's one sort of everybody at every level of discussion on the Mets is discussing. It's in the media, it's in the blogosphere, it's on talk radio, it's everywhere, because Reyes has been just awesome this year. I mean, he has just been unbelievable. He had 3 extra base hits last night, 2 triples. He's been just great. Everything the Mets could have possibly hoped for. He's They asked him, you know, to focus on seeing more pitches. He's seeing more pitches per plate appearances than he ever has before in his career. He's not really showing it in walks yet, but his on-base percentage is the highest it's ever been. Obviously, it's a small sample, but, you know, he's just really crushing the ball. He's just been great. He's been great on defense. He's stealing bases at a high clip. Everything has been about as much as you could possibly hope for. That said, people seem to have determined, and I think it's probably not necessarily the case. People think, well, Sandy Alderson, you know, Moneyball guy. And they think because of that, okay, Moneyball guy equals on-base percentage. Thus, Jose Reyes has, you know, 355 on-base percentage. Jose Reyes is not Ricky Henderson equals Sandy Alderson hates Jose Reyes. And I think it's sort of a leap in logic that probably isn't true, because what it fails to consider is that Jose Reyes is a shortstop. And, you know, as shortstops go, and you guys see Troy Tulowitzki, and so you guys probably don't, or I'm sure you do, but maybe a lot of Rockies fans don't recognize that shortstops can't really hit for the most part, and Jose Reyes can, and Troy Tulowitzki can, and Hanley Ramirez can, and other than that, most shortstops don't. And Jose Reyes is a great hitting shortstop, and Sandy Alderson almost certainly recognizes that. And so when people say, well, Jose Reyes isn't a money ball player because he doesn't get on base that much, it sort of fails to consider the fact that he's actually a very, very, very valuable player because he's a great hitter for a shortstop. So, you know, I think it is something to consider that they might trade him. He's in his last year. His agents are going to smell the open market and think about how much money he can get. And if they're unwilling to negotiate within the season, the Mets might, you know, think about how much they can get in terms of prospects and be, if they're not in contention, be tempted to deal them. But I think that the main thing people fail to consider is that Alderson recognizes the value of Reyes. And I think, you know, saying that he doesn't is just completely false. I think that's the main point I've been trying to make.
I think it's almost a misnomer with the way you described it, that Sandy Alderson's a Moneyball guy and Jose Reyes doesn't have the best on-base percentage in the world. Moneyball was centered around on-base percentage, but I think the fact
it was
being
about
missed
business,
by every,
right?
Exactly. It's not saying that on-base percentage is Moneyball. At the time, it was Moneyball, but now that people are like every team in baseball has some sort of statistical evaluation, although I'm raising eyebrow at the Royals, stats are no longer the money ball because everyone's using them now. So, I mean, I've heard some people say that, you know, old players are the new money ball, which only really applies to the American League or teams without a first baseman. And just, you know, they're always trying to find something to be the new money ball, basically being, I want to get players in the cheap that have an unappreciated skill set or something about them that makes them unappealing to other teams, but they're still good baseball players. So, I mean, in Reyes's case, money ball and his... All you. Go for it.
Right. I mean, Moneyball is just taking advantage of inefficiencies in the market, right, which is just good business, whether it's baseball or anywhere else. And regardless of what you're going to pay Jose Reyes, and maybe it's market rate, elite players only come along every so often. And you know, the Mets' financial situation is... to call it nebulous is an understatement. We don't really know. They're trying to bring on a partner, and theoretically they're trying to bring on a partner so they have financial flexibility to sign guys like Jose Reyes. But, you know, Reyes is 27, going to be 28 in June. I think, you know, the time to shell out big money on a free agent is when you have an elite shortstop that's 28. And yeah, you know, you might have to overpay on the back end of a contract like that, but I think that the time to overpay is for your homegrown shortstop that's playing like Jose Reyes is.
No, you said elite player. I mean, do you put Jose Reyes really among the elite there? I mean, I know where you're going to have a bit of a, you know, home field advantage going for you there. But, I mean, he's had so many struggles the last couple of years of staying healthy and just trying to get his game back to where it was in, you know, 05, 06. Do you really consider him to be among the elite?
Oh yeah, I mean it's a good point, and he certainly wasn't last year and in 09, but I think what you have to consider is just how poorly handled he was by the team in 2009 and 2010, and a lot of that is just on his manager and his general manager in those years, and those were two guys who had the axe over their head, and that's, you know, that goes up to ownership. That's guys that, you know, I don't think there's any reason to ever go into a season with a GM that you don't 100% trust, and the Mets did, and I don't think there's any excuse for that, because Omar Minaya, you know, and it ended up with Henry Mejia, their top pitching prospect in the mop-up role in the bullpen, which was crazy. And it wound up with the Mets doing things like, you know, pushing Reyes back from injury. They misdiagnosed his hamstring injury in 2009. They said it was a calf injury at first, tried to get him to play through it. He injured it worse. They tried to, get him to fight back from it. He ended up tearing it and finishing the season. You know, he had been, I think, put on the DL immediately. Who knows? You know, maybe he misses 2 months instead of the whole season. Last year, when he strained his oblique, they actually, you know, Reyes is a switch hitter. They actually had him hitting only right-handed against both-sided pitchers. It was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. A guy who's been a switch hitter for his whole career, they just decided he was going to bat right-handed exclusively, rather than when he's too injured to bat left-handed, rather than have him put on the DL as he should be. They're like, well, you're too important. Let's just have you hit from one side, even though you've never done this in the major leagues, even though, you know, Lord knows how long you've been a switch hitter. Let's just tough it out, bro, because, you know, we need to keep our jobs. And obviously that's not the way to handle, you know, one of your best players, a guy who missed all of spring training last year with a thyroid condition. We know obviously oblique injuries are tricky enough as it is. And I think now that Reyes is fully healthy and being handled correctly, you see the type of player he can be. And it's a great point. Look, he's a guy who struggled with injuries when he first came up, and obviously struggled with injuries again in 09 and last year. And so it's a risk you run when you sign him to a big contract. And you know, maybe it's a way you can sort of try to eke out a discount on that big contract. But I do think when he's healthy and when he's right and when he's being handled correctly, he is an elite player. Because if you look at those stats from 06 to 08, when he's playing every day and when he can stay healthy, and I believe he can stay healthy because he was healthy from those times and because his injuries have been, for the most part, isolated. It's not all, you know, it's all, not all his left knee like it's Carlos Beltran. It's all separate things. I do think he can be an elite player.
Interesting. So, I mean, well, here's the next question then about Reyes, and we'll kind of jump off him after that. But do you think, given the handling he's had by the Mets organization over the past 2 years that you just mentioned, do you think that's going to really hurt the Mets' chances of re-signing him? Or do you think, you know, Sandy Alderson and, you know, the new front office there has brought enough confidence back to the Reyes camp that he might want to stay in New York?
That's a great question, and obviously, you know, I'm not in Jose Reyes's head, so I can't answer it definitively. He says he loves it. He says he loves Terry Collins. He really seems to like David Wright. He says he's like a brother, and they, you know, they always talk about, you know, playing each other with each other, and how, you know, they've never other than Reyes's first season, really never played on the left side of the infield with anybody else. Reyes has a house on Long Island. His family lives on Long Island, and he says he loves living there. Obviously, if, you know, you get the Carl Crawford contract, I think, you know, Long Island stops, the appeal stops seeming so lovely. I think, you know, money can change a lot of things, but from everything Reyes says, he really does enjoy playing for the Mets and playing and living in New York. So who knows? I think probably there is enough goodwill for the Mets to re-sign him if they're willing to spend the amount of money. I don't think it's the type of thing where he's so bitter about the way he was treated that he's, you know, he wants out no matter what. But, you know, the Mets have to be willing to pay out some amount of money to get him back.
I see. Well, I mean, frankly, keeping Jose Reyes in the National League East is more than fine by me. He's one of those guys that the Rockies hate seeing come to the plate, although it seems like everybody we hate seeing come to the plate. I don't know what the deal is. Anyhow, another trade candidate, well, potential vague trade candidate we saw just the other day mentioned was David Wright. Now, I mean, if it's the same answer, you know, by all means, just say the same answer as Reyes there, but we heard the Mets might be looking to shed that somewhere. I was laughing and saying there's no way they trade David Wright unless they're, you know, completely bowled over with, you know, everyone's best players and prospects ever, but what are the chances there? Do you think David Wright's going to be in New York for the rest of his contract, or do you think he might be shipped off sometime?
I mean, you know, it's so hard to say, and again, I'm with you. I would be shocked, and you know, I think the report was Tigers would be interested in David Wright. And it's like, well, what team wouldn't be interested in David Wright? You know, what team was like, ah, you know, we don't, no, we don't, you know, we're going to go with Kevin Kuzmanoff. He's good. We'll stick with him. You know, and I think that's the thing. And the Mets, Wright hasn't been great this season. He hasn't been great. I mean, he's been excellent, but he hasn't been, again, the 2006 to 2008 Wright was better than, and this is the case with Beltran, Reyes, and Wright. We're all one level of player from 06 to 08 and another level of player, either due to injuries or with Wright, just, who knows, in 09 and in 2010, a second level of player. A slightly lower level of player. Wright was, you know, really still excellent in those years, but definitely a tier below where he was. And, you know, with him, it's weird because it's not an age thing. He's really at the age where he should be hitting his peak. He should be in his prime. So I don't know. You know, people say the park's in his head. People say, you know, people love psychoanalyzing baseball players, and that's not something.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, not something.
Get a catcher bats in the 220s with a great on base percentage, great slugging, and questionable demeanor because he's not very emotional, and suddenly he's a terrible baseball player because he's not fist pumping after every single.
Oh yeah, well David Wright sometimes slams his helmet down after he strikes out, so that obviously means he's crazy. It does seem like the park is particularly poorly suited to Wright, which is odd. He used to, in Shea Stadium, drive the ball to, right center field a lot, and in Citi Field, right center field is about 415 feet away, and a lot of balls go to die there. Of course, you'd think, you know, he'd end up with a lot of doubles down that way, and he doesn't. And he's been striking out just an absolute ton the last couple of years. So, you know, this leads to inevitable speculation from Mets fans that the team's going to trade him, that he needs a change of scenery. I'll believe it when I see it. I believe that, you know, the Mets front office is going to take calls on everyone. They got to, you know, do their diligence and you know, see what happens. But he is the face of the franchise. You don't replace a player like David Wright very easily. And with the amount of talent he has, I think he's always more likely to turn it around than he is to continue sort of scuffling like this. So I think they'd be, you know, like you said, they'd need to be bowled over to make a move.
I do want to ask about your starting rotation, basically. We've seen it change over a little bit from what people might have been used to from previous years. Of course, John Main is pitching for our AAA affiliate right now.
Pitching.
Yeah,
and then
pitching quotes.
You have added a couple guys like Chris Capuano and Chris Young, some sort of veteran types who have struggled with injury the past couple of years. And, you know, I don't follow how the rotation itself in New York is going at the moment, but I was wondering
it's not good.
Oh, okay. That's basically where I was headed. I was wondering what your thoughts are on Capuano and on Chris Young, and if and what they're contributing to your team at the moment.
Well, Chris Young's been great.
Chris Young's fifth in ERA discrepancy. Come on.
Chris Young has been great. He missed a little bit of time with some biceps tendonitis, but he has been great. He's a really weird pitcher to watch because he throws about 85 miles an hour and constantly up in the zone, and it looks like batting practice pitching. It feels like, man, let me in there. And I guess, you know, with his height, they say it looks like it's coming in, you know, it must look like it's coming in way, way harder than that. You know, he's about 6'10". I guess you guys have seen him with the Padres.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, so he's a guy who just deceives batters with that. He hides the ball real well, and he's been great. And apparently, you know, as a fly ball guy, you know, he's well suited to Citi Field and he's been real good. Mike Pelfrey just got off. He had a real nice start his last time out, but he just got off to a brutal, brutal, brutal start this year. There was even talk about, you know, and Pelfrey is what he is. He's sort of a league average innings eater. But there was talk of sending him down to the minors to sort of right the ship this year, because he got off to such a rough start after he had been their opening day starter. Capuano hasn't been downright awful. He's had some trouble going deep in games. He seems to tire in the middle of his starts. He's struck out a lot of guys. He's also walked a lot of guys, so he gets his pitch count up pretty high. And it seems like the peripherals are better than the results generally. I don't think that's a move anyone's killing Sandy Alderson for, because he's been generally decent. And, you know, the Mets haven't gotten, I mean, John Neese and Ari Dickey both haven't been as great as, all of the guys have been better of late than they were at the beginning of the season. The beginning of the season, the rotation was just awful. Outside of Young, everybody was just terrible. And they've all sort of, settled in now. You know, the Mets were hoping for a ton out of Ari Dickey this year after how good he was last year, and he had a bit of a problem with his fingernail earlier this year, and for a knuckleballer, that's hell. And he struggled with his control, and then he had some trouble with wind, which is another problem for a knuckleballer. You know, which is a funny thing, but it was a concern for him. He's had some better starts. Neese had a nice start his last time out, so, you know, he's been better of late, but he got off to a rough start. The rotation's generally been bad, but they've settled in, and it's massively helped the bullpen, because the bullpen too was off to a brutal start. At one point it was like Collins had to use basically every guy every day, because, you know, the everybody in the rotation was going three or four innings, and so, you know, the bullpen was overworked, everybody was getting beat up, and it looked like, you know, they might never win a game. That was when they were sort of at that 5-13 low point in the season. It's been much better since then, sort of all around. They've been playing better games and winning more of them.
All right.
Better to the point where a little bit of health might push them over the top, or make them a bit more of a surprise in the National East than expected, or are we still kind of have a fatalistic look on the end of the season for the Mets?
I'm staying optimistic. It's still early enough that I think they can crawl back into the mix a little bit. The Phillies got off to such a hot start, which sort of surprised me given the way their offense looks. And now I guess Utley is rehabbing, which makes things scary. But I think, you know, their Mets are 14-18 now, and Angel Pagan just had a bit of a setback, which hurts, because they don't have a lot of depth in the outfield. But they can hit, you know, the Mets can hit. Carlos Beltran has been great. Reyes has been great, and I think if they're pitching, if they, you know, can keep it together and stay healthy, they'll be able to be decent. And they'll never be great, and I don't think they're ever going to be, you know, good enough. I don't think their pitching's ever going to be good enough that they'll be able to reel off, you know, 10 or 11 wins in a row and be a type of, like, you know, Rockies-style juggernaut squad that you guys see sometimes. But, you know, I think that they'll be decent enough to be in the mix in the summer, at least.
Rockies is a juggernaut. I like that. But I think
it happens, you know, you guys, it happens all the time. It's fun.
But at the same time, the opposite can happen to us as well. We are quite streaky in general.
Yeah.
Any more from you, Greg, or are we about wrapped up here?
Well, just real quick series preview, I guess. You know, these three games are coming up Monday through Wednesday of this next week. And I was just wondering, Ted, if you have any predictions or thoughts on what you expect to see during the three-game series here.
Man, I hope Troy Tulowitzki's cooled off by now. The last time it was like he hit a home run every freaking pitch he saw.
Our whole offense has cooled down quite a bit at this point.
I mean,
but Tulowitzki did hit a home run last night, the first pitch off Matt Cain. So
his 100th home run. Yeah.
You know, I guess it's going to be Capuano. Capuano, Pelfrey, and Nice, you guys will see.
Yeah.
So, you know, which you miss Chris Young, but that's probably, given that park, it's probably a good thing for the Mets.
I think we missed Chris Young in the four-game series in New York as well. I think he was the one pitcher we didn't see. So we kind of lucked out there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's been their ace so far. And I guess, you know, Dickey is probably... I mean, it will, you know, Pelfrey has been pitching well. I think you might expect, you know, he's a guy who can keep the ball on the ground and hopefully if he does that effectively, he can have a good game. He had a rough start in Philly. He had also been, and I'm embarrassed to say I had the same thing. I got it in the Mets clubhouse. Pelfrey had been so sick, he lost 15 pounds.
Hmm.
And, he started out fine. He pitched like three good innings and then he just lost it in like the fourth or fifth inning and ended up allowing, you know, six or seven runs and you know, the Phillies ended up winning the game 10-0. But that start was bookended by good starts from Pelfrey, and I think he's starting to put it all together. So, you know, if he can keep the ball down, which he has been doing, he might be able to give the Mets a good start. The three guys that are going have been pitching better of late, so that might help him out.
All right, Andrew, anything else?
Very quickly, what's the timetable on Santana?
They said, I mean, whew, they're saying he's throwing from 150 feet now, and he's, I guess, ahead of schedule, and they're hoping he'll be throwing from a mound soon. Shoulder injuries, man, they're so tricky. And when I was at the press conference when they said he needed the surgery, and I swear they said, you know, a lot of other guys have had this surgery, like Chemin Wong and Mark Pryor and Kelvin Escobar.
Oh, God, why would you say that?
And I was like, wait a minute, what? Like, that's done. What? That's right. And so, you know, I guess guys have come back from this surgery. I think Oral Hershiser had the same thing and came back. I think, you know, Santana is just an unbelievable athlete and an unbelievable competitor. And so I wouldn't put anything past him. But, you know, I'm taking this stance that I'll be pleasantly surprised if he pitches this year and, you know, extremely surprised if he's ever a great pitcher again. I think if he's a good pitcher for the Mets, they should consider themselves very lucky because the shoulder injuries are just brutal on starting pitchers, on any pitcher.
All right.
Well, that's all I got, Greg.
All right. Well, Tad, once again, thanks for joining us, and look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Guys, thanks for having me.
right. That was Ted Berg of Tedquarters.net. I forgot to mention that when we were at the end of the interview, so I will drop that name again right now. Andrew, you have his Twitter name. I don't remember it.
Yeah, it's OG Ted Berg. Follow him if you want to keep up with the Mets at all. And generally, he does some. He has pretty funny tweets as it is. So he's always a pleasure to follow as far as baseball news goes. And he just kind of falls into my line of thinking a lot with over sarcasm and stuff like that. So if you appreciate what I think's funny, you'll probably appreciate Ted Berg on Twitter.
But Andrew, I thought nobody on the blog appreciates your humor.
No, I'm pretty sure nobody does. I'm not worried about it. So, well, the thing is, we, as you said, we do have listeners who aren't on the blog. So,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's not going to change anything.
Uh huh. All right. Well, we should be back in a week, as always, on Monday, the 16th. And until then, take care.